Welcome to The Graveyard Shift, the podcast where anything goes, as long as there's a good story to tell. Join Todd, Matt, Jimmy, and Gary as they bust myths and share advice that hopefully isn't terrible. Let's dive in.
Well, welcome to The Graveyard Shift, and we're really excited today because we have quite the guest today. And she's an accomplished funeral home owner of almost 45 years, the founder of Funeral Women Lead, the podcast, which we are we bitter rivals or just rivals?
No, we're actually idolized, you guys. You know, and we're going to get to the point sometime where you idolize us.
All right. That sounds fair, right, Lisa. Good.
I'm going to take a note.
Yeah. Write that down, Jim.
Her podcast is named Four Women and a Funeral. Love the name. And she's also the author of Wake Up Calls, a journey of leading, of learning to lead and succeed in the funeral and death care profession. So she's got her plug in. For the book. By the way, I finished reading the book this weekend, Lisa.
You
really
did.
Enjoyed it.
Yeah. You spent bread.
Yes.
I love it.
Yeah, fortunately.
Wait a second. I thought we were talking about the drum tech.
Oh, well, that's my husband's fiction book. So I got to put that in. The Drum Tech by Monty Crabbs. I mean, it's amazing, and it's a little spooky, little horror. I don't know if you can handle it, Jimmy.
And a lot of
but it also has some humor, which I know the rest of you would enjoy. I don't know about Jimmy's humor.
Do you have a free chapter in the back of your book of it?
I do not.
Second edition.
I have one in my briefcase, though. If someone wants to go get into it, I'll hold it up for the watching audience. So, yeah. Yeah, right. We're both writers. We both kind of spent the last 2 years creating some cool things. And mine is, of course, all the proceeds are going to charitable organizations that support women's scholarships in our profession. So.
Awesome. Well, what I enjoyed about the book is really, I think, a lot of vulnerability showed in
perseverance.
You know, sharing your journey and so I thought, just first of all, congratulations.
Thank you.
A lot of us talk about writing books, but very few people.
It's really hard. Yeah. I mean, you don't realize how hard it is until you get into it. And I took a 6-month book class and had some great help with editors, and that was a lot of fun. But they make you work hard. So if you're thinking about a book,
you can afford the paid version of ChatGPT.
That is not this crowd. You talk to these other authors and my coach, and that is a big no-no, Jimmy. But you know, go ahead and give it a try and see if anybody buys it.
Yeah,
never heard the words "big no-no." You know, slow Jimmy down that.
One way to get me going. Yeah.
So I wanted, I think, Lisa, as we were preparing for this, we talked a lot about leadership, and I really wanted to, I think that benefits the men and the women in the profession, and we'll close up with some words of wisdom for you and the women in this profession. Looking forward to that. So let's talk a little bit about just kind of a big broad question to kick us off here, Lisa, is, you know, talk about the leadership lessons that you've learned during your career.
Oh boy. Well, most of them are in the book.
You'll have to buy
how long do we
coffee.
Have?
Let's
how
talk
long
about
do we
the ones
today?
That aren't in the book.
Right. Yeah, they hit the cutting room floor. That was, yeah. I do have them saved, though, Jim, and I do believe your name was in one of them. Yeah. So, well, maybe your father's. It could have been your father's name. We, you know, over the years, my dad died when I was 30 years old. He was 53. And the hardest part about that was that I had been licensed funeral director, and I didn't know how to grieve or mourn a loss. I'd helped families for 8 years, and I had no idea what to do with that. Plus, I did not know how to run a business, much less myself. I had no clue how to manage people. This was not taught back in the day, right? I was a funeral director. I was a mom of a young boy. I was a wife, a community volunteer. So the hardest things for me, I believe, the leadership lessons, were learning how to become a leader. And that's not easy. I mean, who teaches that? You don't learn it in mortuary school. There's not leadership training there. It's not in college. And for those of you that don't know my background, I actually was a Spanish major with a minor in Portuguese. Traveled and lived in Mexico. Si yo puedo hablar la lengua de la gente de México.
Si.
Right? Second spoken language in our country. ¿Tú hablas?
Más o menos.
Más o menos. Muy
un
bien.
Poquito.
Un poquito. Sí. Yo también. So we...
That was a shameless plug to...
Shameless.
Yeah, to appeal to our Hispanic audience.
Yes, and you should
Silencio,
have
Silencio, por favor.
Lucas Funeral, si hablas.
Para todos que necesitan, ¿verdad? All right, for those
mucho
who
dinero.
Really... Mucho dinero. Oh, it's very expensive.
It comes in English and Spanish.
Yeah. It does. Jimmy comes in English and Spanish. I love that.
Other.
I love that. But becoming a leader is not something we know how to do. So over the years, and a lot of the lessons are in my book, I had a lot of failures, guys. I mean, I bombed big time. We have in the St. Louis market a number of unions. And I realized after the first attempt to unionize the embalmers and the funeral directors at Bowie's that we were not paying attention to our employees. We weren't caring for them in the right ways. And that was my fault. I mean, when you're the leader, you got to look here, right? Inside, you point at yourself. These lessons were brutal. I mean, I had a manager tell people, you know, here's a dime, go call somebody who cares, right?
Back then, it was a dime. Did I get that from Gary?
The problem is it costs more to make a call than a dime.
just a bit. So, you know, horror stories of being a funeral homeowner. So, like, you know, the day after Thanksgiving, he tells me that he's splitting from his wife and his girlfriend is his administrative assistant. Okay, so now think about the HR complications. And then on Monday, I get a letter from the union, and there was a union petition filed. And what I found is you can't go and talk to your staff about what's going on, why. Why do you want to do this? Because you can't try to persuade them in any way. But I did have some people share with me and says, you know what? We're not being treated well. We don't feel like you care. You care, the company cares, the managers care. And so that was a big wake-up call for me. And I said, well, we have to do better. We did not unionize. We were very blessed that the majority of the staff at Bowie's believed that we were going to change and they wanted to be part of that change, and we didn't need the unions in. They can be great in some large companies, but we were not a large company. And you also, there's some things you can't do. Like if you want to take care of cosmetics, at the last minute you have to call in a union embalmer, even if it's after hours when a family comes in for first viewing. And that's kind of tough when you can do cosmetics yourself. Right? But they wouldn't let you do that. So our people came around and we started working on growing ourselves as leaders. It had to start with me first. Mm-hmm. I joined this organization called the Leaders Network. You might remember a guy named Larry Beeson. John Horan was one of your guests not too long ago. They brought us together in Denver, Colorado and said, we're going to teach you leadership. And here's how. And we read books like John Maxwell's 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. We got into The Ideal Team Player from Patrick Lencioni, The Advantage, all kinds of other books we read together. We studied best practices. We went out in the world of funeral service and outside of funeral service to the Ritz-Carlton and other companies to learn from them how to be better leaders of our business and how to help grow leaders at all levels. Mm-hmm. So that was really beneficial, and that was probably the biggest lesson I learned, besides the fact that I thought, as a funeral home owner and cemetery and crematory and pet business and flower shop, all that stuff, right, that the focus was taking care of our customer, number one priority.
Yeah.
True? Not true? No. I had it backwards. And I was focused on the customer, also profit, also operations, also community volunteering. And guess what happened? I totally had it wrong. I had to flip that organizational chart upside down. Here's Lisa at the bottom. I'm at the bottom. And that's where owners should be. We should be supporting and uplifting our employees and caring for them as the number one priority in our businesses. And that took years for me to learn that through a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
And I overtrusted people, too. I have a pretty big heart. Most of you don't get to see it very often. Right?
That's true.
It's true. I was raised by a very German, hard German family, you know, that hard driving, and you just kind of, there's no tears in funeral service. There's no crying at funerals, mm-hmm. right? And so you have to tough it up. And that's how I thought I should be as a person, as a leader, that I should be tough, right? Well, tough does not apply to caring. It's like the polar opposite. You can be tough inside, but you have to show your people that you truly care for them.
People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
That's right. Great quote. I bet that's yours, right?
Jimmy Lucas.
Is it? Yeah.
Pretty sure I read that somewhere.
Do you have something to write down on?
Yes.
I'm going to take a note for you, man.
Again.
Would you? Write that down.
So,
well,
so,
a quote.
And Lisa, when you were going through your journey, I mean, it sounds like first you had to commit to your changing yourself.
Yeah. I did.
And then you moved on to teaching leadership at all levels in your funeral home. What did that look like?
We did. And so I realized, you know, I'm not a perfect leader, never will be. We're all still continuously learning to improve ourselves. I know Jim's got a long way to go, right? We're going to pick on him today.
More than most.
It's a yeah. Jimmy list.
We'll just
Jimmy.
Pause for a minute. We'll run right. the online poll.
Always right about now. Me, isn't it? Yeah, there it is.
Just wanted to be right.
There's no Jimmy without me.
Exactly.
Thanks for acknowledging.
So, you know, well, learning to be a leader, of course, takes a lot of work, but you have to share what you're learning. So I took all of that I was learning from the Leaders Network and the books I was reading, and we started reading together. We started talking about leadership. I brought leaders and other teachers and trainers, Larry Beeson being one of them, Marguerite Hamm with Igniting Success, came in, and we started teaching leadership. And I said, let's do more. We have to do more. So we started Bowie University. And every person who came into our company had the opportunity to grow themselves as a leader from day one. We had a 30-day, 90-day, 180-day, all the way through the years, right? Their first year of employment is very critical. Write that down, Jim. Jimmy, yes,
me,
please.
Thank you.
Me, Jim,
yes.
Me.
Thanks, Liz.
Right. Yeah. I'll get this. By the end of the podcast, I'll go, Jim, me.
Yeah. We'll see.
We'll see. Right. So it doesn't matter what their role was, right? Whether they're a receptionist, whether they're a frontline administrator, whether they're a greeter, whether they work in the cemetery, you know, every one of our employees, we felt it was important for them to grow as a leader. So we read books together. We did some training together. We brought in trainers. And we also did some 360s.
Yeah, so because that's an interesting concept, the 360-degree
view. It's hard.
Yeah. What's that like? I mean, what was it like for you to get direct feedback? And then what was it like for your key leaders?
Right. It was pretty brutal. So being an authentic leader, it's looking at yourself first in the mirror, right? You might want to write that down, Jimmy.
I've already got mastered that one.
Go ahead. Looking in the mirror is not easy.
It comes down
to the
book.
Right. So we did this anonymous survey thing, right? Which a lot of people are like, oh no, it's really not anonymous. Lisa's going to see it. My manager's going to see it. So no, we did it, outsourced it. So no one really saw who. And we asked for some brutal honesty to tell us how we were doing, how I was doing as the owner, how I was doing as their supervisor. Some people are hesitant to tell you to your face. And I wanted to hear the brutal truth, right? So we have to face those brutal facts. Ah, oh, gosh, who is that from? What book is that from, guys?
Well, the Tell the Kind Truth is Pat Lencioni.
Right, but facing the brutal facts.
Oh, good. I'm bringing it out of this.
Right. So think about Good to Great. You know that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Right, Jim Collins.
Yeah.
So facing those brutal facts of that I was not a great leader, that some of my leaders needed to change as well. So we started working on that. And then we started growing everybody else, and that's how you replace yourself too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can't do it all by ourselves. As our businesses grow, you guys are from sizable businesses. We were serving well over 2,500 families when I retired.
I was going to ask you with this epiphany. Where were you?
We were
location-wise. How
right.
Many staff?
So,
where was that?
Yeah. So when Dad died, we were around 350 families a year.
Okay.
We did not. And 3 months before he died, he bought his partner out in the cemetery. And I know Gary and I could sit here and talk about cemeteries, and
yes,
it was a disaster. It's in the book. It was a financial disaster, and Daddy, being a great leader and a great businessman, but he also wanted to take care of his family. He moved some life insurance money into his personal estate, and I had nothing to pay off debt with when he died. And cemeteries take time to grow profitably, and there were a lot of promises. Like on a balance sheet, I learned how to read balance sheets really fast. There was this thing called deferred marker payables. You ever heard of that? Yeah. So that's when you don't have the marker installed yet, but you still have to buy it and put it in. But somebody over here has already paid you for that marker. So I thought, oh, they're in storage with, you know, one of the companies, Matthews, yeah. Not in storage. Had not been produced. And in Missouri at the time, we had no trusting laws for memorialization markers or mausoleums. So all these people had pre-purchased mausoleums, lawn crypts, markers.
Wow.
There was about maybe $850,000 of them dollars in there that we had no money. I said, well, where's the money? So the money wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
The funeral home company carried that cemetery for many, many years. I went to my mom and I said, I really don't know how to do this, but I'm going to go find out. I started going to the American Cemetery Association meetings, ICCF and now ICCFA. And learning how a cemetery should run profitably.
Mm-hmm.
And if it wasn't for guys like the Freitags and his predecessors that helped mentor me, I wouldn't have had a clue, and some of my team, how a cemetery could run profitably.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's in great shape, and it's still serving families, and everything's paid for, and everything's trusted, as it should be. In addition to endowed care, we also have trust for all those other things. So,
yes, yeah, so that's quite the... quite the journey and quite the...
it was pretty scary.
Lifetime of life lessons.
Yeah.
Are any of those markers still being fulfilled?
I think...
Like, one or two left.
Well, you can't,
all these years later.
There might be a few, but that was, over 40 years ago. We'll talk about how long. Not everybody wants to put that marker in the ground right away.
Yeah.
Sometimes they want to wait, or they're like, well, what if I get divorced? And my wife's name is already on that marker. How do I get it off? Well, it's solid bronze. You can't. You have to replace it. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I have a question, because in your post-retirement, or in your current,
it's kind of post-retirement from Bowie's. I retired from Bowie's in 2019, the pandemic.
I want to talk a little bit about your what you've learned in your coaching. And, as you're visiting with young funeral directors, young women funeral directors, what do you hear about how they're being managed and led in funeral service? And how does that kind of overlap with your life experience?
As a young funeral director, I was a priest, thought I were flight attendants or a receptionist, or you'd answer the phone on a death call and they say, I'd like to speak to a funeral director, and you are one, right? You go to help a friend down the other side of the city and drive a hearse in their funeral and bring my hearse over there, and they wouldn't let me drive our hearse because women didn't drive hearses back then. So, yeah, there were some crazy stuff. These young women, that's why we started Funeral Women Lead. That's why I started to become a coach. I reached out to some women that I knew were struggling, and they told me as they wanted to become an owner someday, and they didn't know how to get there. And I thought, well, I was an owner, and I had no idea what I was doing. So all the lessons that I learned, maybe I can help teach them. Mm-hmm. So after the pandemic, when I retired, I realized there were a lot of women in need. And I just kind of threw it out there, did a little marketing, see what, how you throw things up on the wall. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they stick, right? So that stuck. And these young women are telling me stories that I heard from other women back in my generation. They weren't being supported financially. Their pay was less than the men's. They were being experienced, some of them, unfortunately, sexual harassment. Or being told, you'll never get there because you're a woman. Or, hey, don't bother having children while you're in this profession because you won't be supported and you'll never get to the top if you have kids. I thought, wait a minute, I'm nursing my babies in the funeral home, mm-hmm. right? I'm schlepping them around. I've got them in a little sack. I'm going in to see families for visitations. Families don't care.
Matt,
they're just glad you're there. Did you nurse your babies?
Matt? Tried.
Did you? How'd that go?
Not well.
Yeah, probably not.
Bad touch.
What about you, Jimmy? Did you nurse?
I tried.
Yeah.
Went better.
Yeah. Well, you do it in private,
Yeah. That was my problem.
Yeah, you don't do it on a funeral, Jim. Yeah, but there are those, sometimes there's that feeding time right in the middle as you ask the congregation to rise, and oh my goodness, I have to go inside and change my blouse. Yeah. Right? So things that, and these young women don't have anyone to talk to that understand kind of what they're going through. Waddling down the aisle when you're 8 months pregnant, right? And you can't lift anymore. You can't be in the embalming room, and you're trying to help families. The lack of understanding, the lack of compassion and care. I just talked to a young woman today here at NFDA who said, this work is hard. I said, yes, it is. It is hard. Do you feel supported? She goes, no. She goes, I don't feel supported. And she's with other women. And sometimes other women don't support other women, right? So we got to fix that.
Yeah.
So there's some coaching you can do and leadership training, but the biggest thing women need today are their self-confidence improvement. Mm-hmm. You've heard about imposter syndrome, all those things. They don't feel like inside that they can do it. And so I believe we're losing them.
Yeah. That was a lot of your self-talk early in your career.
It was.
Scary. And I read it in the book. So,
yes, it did.
So what do you share with women who are doubting their belonging in this profession?
Well, find yourself a good mentor and a good coach. I believe, and surround yourself with people who believe in supporting you. Mm-hmm. And work on yourself. I found in my coaching that there was a lot of life coaching needs. So at the Funeral Women Lead, we have a leadership academy, and it's being run by a licensed professional counselor. Because as you start coaching people, you find out, like Jimmy has really incessant personal needs he needs to fix, right? And I can't.
Different Jimmy.
I can't fix it.
There's no me in that Jimmy, right?
They call my dad Jim.
Yeah. Do they? Okay. All right, man. Yeah. Well, each of us have our own insecurities. They come from our life experiences. They come from just some of it's genetics. Some of it, there's some depression. We know there's burnout going on in our profession. So we have to pay attention to that as owners and leaders and recognize that. And they don't feel that that's being recognized. And so I say, speak louder. Speak louder, share your thoughts, share your feelings, and it's okay to cry in funeral service. It's okay to go to your boss, your manager, and say, I'm not fulfilled here. I'm not feeling supported here. So we're teaching them to speak up, which isn't easy because they're scared.
Yeah.
They're scared they're going to lose their jobs. So what happens is they gracefully just exit. Like Gallup is reporting right now a 21% engagement level worldwide in the workplace. So think about that. If only 21% of your employees are really engaged, right, feeling cared for, being mentored, being coached, being trained, and being developed, because that's the keys, all the keys to engagement, and being praised,
yeah.
Right? Hopefully you're praising them every day and doing good things and finding good things that they're doing well.
That's culture. And I think
it is
all
culture.
Of it is based on culture in the funeral home. And my grandmother was licensed back in the 60s. And I was kind of raised by women, and our leadership team amongst our locations is mostly made up of women.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about culture. If you don't have culture, then it's for not just for women in funeral service, but all of your coworkers.
All of them.
You work.
I agree.
So.
Creating a culture where people feel comfortable coming to you,
yeah.
And that's kind of hard because we're scary. As owners, they look at us no matter how warm and friendly we are, and we show them we are. They still feel you're a scary guy, man.
I get that.
That is scary.
Yeah. And he has a great smile. But if you can't see it, if you're listening to this podcast. All right, great. It's sort of scary. Look at the smile. Yeah.
It's more laughing. Demonic.
Yeah. Or demonic. Well, your eyes smile.
Put your leather mask
yeah,
back.
Gary, I didn't realize you still had all your teeth.
Wow.
Most of them.
Wait, can we see?
Yes.
So Lisa, we're preparing for this, we talked about the profession. You know, how to lead into the future, because we've really got a situation now, and it's the reality is that about 75 to 80% of mortuary science graduating classes are female.
That's correct.
So how is that going to influence the future of this profession?
Well, at Funeral Women Lead. That's the foundation we're starting this year, we believe that women are the key to the future success of this profession. We believe that they bring their hearts to this profession, and not that men don't. And I know you guys all have hearts because I've known most of you for quite some time. No, Gary
no,
says Gary says it has no heart.
Compassion and empathy are just at a different level, not in a bad way, but I
yeah.
agree.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So being more empathetic is a good thing. And using your heart and really showing your staff you care, I've said that before. I believe that women need that from us. And with 75% graduating from mortuary school, and that was in 24, we know the numbers are growing. I'm hearing in graduation classes of all women.
Yeah.
We have to embrace their challenges and differences and listen to them and ask them. I mean, when you all have staff meetings, what do? Do you sit around and talk and say, hey, how am I doing as a boss? Do any of you do that?
Yeah.
It's scary to do. Right? But what are we meeting your needs as a company? Open yourself up a little bit. Anyone?
I did that once, Lisa.
How'd that go?
I'll share a quick story. I was asking all of my people who reported to me, and I said, when we have our one-on-ones, what do I do that irritates you?
Ooh, I love that question.
Right?
That's a list.
One of my
did they just hand
employees,
it to you?
Well, yeah. Well, you just said it really bothers me because I work with a lot of people who work remotely. It's like I can hear you clicking in your keyboard. Yes.
What's that search engine history look like?
They apparently also listen to the graveyard shift.
Yeah. So I agree. That was one of the most important questions I ever asked my people.
Well, I like to ask the question, how can I be a better owner here, and how can I be better supportive of you,
mm-hmm.
right? What more do you need? Now, we can't always grant all wishes, right? But we can listen. And if you start seeing trends going on and people are telling you the same thing, it's probably everyone's reality. So I believe that we have to ask. We have to ask questions and involve our young women and men together in problem solving some of your challenges in your business. You know, open it up to idea sessions. Make your staff meetings not about the facts and the families we're serving. Yeah, you can talk about revenue per case. You can talk about customer satisfaction ratios. But open it up to say, you know, good friend John Horan says, you know, how can we do things better? How can we, what do we start doing? What should we stop doing? What can we do more of or less of? Right? So when you ask those kind of questions of your team, do it while you're out on a service. Do it while you're just hanging out in the front lines, you know, reception. Yeah. And listen to their answers. And start logging those down, because they're going to tell you, honestly, they're out there serving people every single day. And as owners, we're not always present when we should be, because we have a lot of responsibilities too, right?
No, that's great feedback. One thing we were talking about was when you made the decision to put your employees first, you made the decision to listen, to receive feedback, I mean truly listen and receive feedback and change. The question, I think you used the word breadcrumbs. Your businesses leave breadcrumbs, they leave a trail of evidence that shows that management and leadership and ownership are connecting to their people. So what are some of those breadcrumbs that you would describe?
Oh, gosh. You know, there are so many of them. I look at the breadcrumbs as little victories, you know, little things that tell you that the staff is doing better. Well, the threat to unionization stopped. Mm-hmm. That was one. They started getting more involved in community, right? So do you struggle sometimes as owners having your staff get involved in volunteer? Mm-hmm. We had none of that. Our retention levels grew. We had 98% retention when I left Bowie's and retired. And I believe that's the key to not just retaining, but recruiting employees at a higher level, is if when you start caring for them, training them, developing them, opening things up and teaching them about how your business is doing and asking for their input on how to get better, all of a sudden your volume starts growing. So it's like, what do we do? Do we put the cart before the horse, or the horse goes first? So if we put the emphasis on our staff, naturally, they will serve families better if they are feeling well cared for. And it starts going like this. I mean, your volume goes up.
Right.
Your client family satisfaction goes up. Everything changed when I started working on myself as a leader. And then I started helping them learn how to be better leaders. Everything changed. It was like flip the whole business upside down. And we started growing.
Big difference between leadership and management, and understanding the difference between the two.
Yeah.
And for us, we work real hard on finding people doing things right versus finding people doing things wrong. Mm-hmm. And what that does, it opens up a collaboration, a conversation of trust, and how can we be better and partner. We don't use the word employee. We use the
team.
Word coworker.
Coworker, team member.
Mm-hmm. And I hate it when folks call me boss, because if I'm going to be a boss, it's going to be a really hard conversation, and I really don't want to get there. So we work real hard on, you know, how do we support one another. So we're equal. I mean, I show up at a church to help out. I go to whoever's in charge and say, what do you need me to do? Not like, here's what you're going to do.
Yeah, right.
I think those are the little things that build maybe your breadcrumbs. I'm taking it right.
I think that's right.
I like sourdough, by the way.
Oh, good. It's good to hear. I like gluten-free sourdough. Yeah.
So, Gary, at Spring Grove, when you think about, you know, the breadcrumbs that your business is leaving behind to show that you're working hard to engage your people, what are the people doing and showing and saying?
Well, we do employee surveys every 2 years. And we have done 360s. Part of our review process, the last question is, what can I do to better support you?
Yes.
So it's we include that as part of our review process. And it's trying to, as Jimmy said, trying to celebrate the victories or highlight. We have a reward system or a recognition system within the company that any employee can recognize any other employee.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then we draw those and read them at employee acknowledgement ceremonies, and then they get a chance to win. It's between
a new
25,
car.
It's 25 and 100 bucks. No, it's not a new car. Okay. Sorry, Oprah.
We had an annual one, and we called it the Touch the Heart Award. And so they would recognize each other for touching others' hearts, whether it was a fellow team member or whether it was a family we served. And they would be monthly Touch the Hearts. And then all 12 of their names went into a pot, and we pulled at our annual Christmas party a trip to Disney.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Ours is called Caught Doing It Right, COT.
Yeah.
And it's intercompany, and we do it every 2 weeks on an all-staff video conference.
And that's creative, because a COT is a device used by funeral directors on transfers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done.
Thank you.
Oh, so, I like that.
That's a wrap.
Yep. So, Matt, in your business, what kind of breadcrumbs do you see?
Would you see an employee who is going above and beyond? No, I'm sorry, staff.
Associate.
When you see someone on your team going above and beyond, I think people only do that when things are going right. And, you know, we try to prioritize making sure people have their time off and they have a schedule that is, you know, works as well as it can given the challenges of our profession, licensing rules. But when someone still comes in on their day off because they want to show that family in, or they say, hey, I bought something, or I did something for this family.
Not because they had to, but
yeah.
They to.
I mean, if you're not taking care of people, they'll only put up with that for so long before you see it in everything they do. Or they're not the right person to be on the bus at the same time too. So I think when you see people doing great work, they do great work because they want to do great work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of the day,
that's leadership brand though.
It is, and when you see them supporting each other. Without you asking them to, right?
Yeah.
So you see Grandma Helen, who's just an amazing woman who's retired from Bowie's, but she worked reception for us in the evenings. Mm-hmm. She'd work any night, any holiday, any time you needed her. This woman, this little tiny woman, would be pushing caskets across the front lobby, taking them into the chapel by herself at night. I'm like, Helen, wait, stop. We're going to do this together. But they would take Grandma Helen out to her car with an umbrella. They'd get her keys and bring the car to her underneath the canopy, right? Grandma Helen was like our company grandma. And when you see those little breadcrumbs of staff truly caring, they started throwing baby showers for each other, wedding showers, you know, anniversary parties, birthday parties. They decorate somebody's cubicle or their car, right? So that's when you know you've done something well, that they're starting to support each other. Much as you are trying to support them.
I think that's a key thing in our business. What we found is when our employees started, number one, guarding the culture, and then number two, promoting the culture on their own. And when they can do those two things, it becomes the process of figuring out who's on the bus. People start to figure out who deserves to be on the bus and if they don't fit on the bus themselves.
Oh, yeah. They can be brutal. I mean, if they don't fit, they're going to make their lives miserable, aren't they?
Mm-hmm.
And they'll finally weed out the people they don't think is a good fit for our culture. I love that. They also will promote and speak about you and help you find new employees.
Exactly.
They'll go back to all their classmates, everybody else that they graduated from, and they'll bring you new team members.
Some of the best new team members are exactly that. Other coworkers are saying, hey, I worked with this person when I was here.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for a job. I think they'd be a good fit. What a compliment that is.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's a great compliment. Hey, so let's turn the discussion a little bit here to Funeral Women Lead.
Sure.
What was the vision behind that and how has it changed over the years?
Well, you know, when you're one person, right? And your coaching company is doing really well, but you're coaching so many people that you realize I can't help them all.
Do you wear a cape?
I don't wear a cape. No, but I will tell you a little
Something
story.
Something like the word league. You would think you would.
Yeah,
have, like,
league.
Justice League.
The Justice League.
That's what I'm thinking. You need a cape.
Oh, you might be right.
Secret identity. And secret hideout.
You know, I'm thinking maybe.
Thank you. There you are. You just showed up with me. Thanks.
Our four women in the funeral needs to all have capes, right? They're all my heroes.
Just
so, I like the story of the little boy who's on the beach. And there were all these sand dollars that got washed up at the shore. And he's over there and he's picking each one up and he's throwing them all back in. And this older gentleman comes walking down the beach and sees him. And he says, son, you can't possibly save them all. And he looks up at this man and he just says, well, if I made a difference in one of their lives today, then I've done my job. Mm-hmm. So that's how I felt as a personal coach to a lot of these young women in business. However, there's thousands and thousands and hundreds of thousands of young women out there now today coming out of mortuary school, coming into all the supplier areas as well. And they're seeking mentorship, seeking coaching. And I'm one person. So I said, what can we do? So I got together with a group of friends, actually here in Chicago, Melissa Posey Luce, who's with Security National Life now. She's a funeral director coming out of her family business. She used to be with NFDA. And we sat at this little table in the bar. So if you come over to the Fairmont and you walk straight in the door, there's that little circular bar down there, and that table to the right is where I ran this idea by Melissa and said, what do you think? Should we start an organization that helps women overall, finds ways to offer coaching, mentoring, wellness, and leadership training for them? Because let's face it, not all of the employers can provide that. I mean, you guys are pretty much of the size where you can do that internally, but not every funeral home is. The average funeral home size, what, in the U.S. is 250 calls, maybe 125. I'm not sure. But they can't afford all that. They can send them out to the Funeral Service Foundation, has a lot of scholarships that we sponsor programs. But what is there to really support these women in their growth? Helping them become more confident about themselves, feeling like they belong. Helping them find a great job and a great culture. Like right now, I got three guys sitting here, and I could send any woman that I coach to you, and I know they'd be in a great home. But these women don't know where to find that those resources, right? And you probably have mostly men listening to your podcast. Do you think you have any women?
Probably.
Maybe a few.
I don't know.
No, I'm kidding.
I don't think we actually have any listeners.
Yeah. You're probably right.
Both of them are men.
Well, I've listened several times. Yeah. Right. So we have to reach out to them and find them. I've talked to many state association women already this week here at NFDA about the their state presidents, or I'm a past state president. A woman from Australia came in. She says, I'm past chairman of our Australian association, and here's the new incoming chairman, both women. So I think we have to do more, and that's what Funeral Women Lead is doing. We have a leadership summit we'll be doing, and the Leadership actually Academy goes all year round online. You meet in person once, graduate the next year. Our Women's Wellness Summit is going to be focused on the mental, physical, and business and professional and personal wellness. And so we'll have that wellness group that'll be working together over the years and continue to support them long term. Not a one and done event, but continuous mentoring, continuous coaching. And we'll be looking for coaches and mentors. So if your listeners have ideas and they would like to be part of that group, including you guys, because men can mentor women and women can mentor men.
Well, on that too, I mean, in our last episode when we were talking about succession and they were talking about the numbers of people looking to retire in the next few years in this profession.
Right.
And you combine that number with the numbers we just discussed about mortuary science programs, there was going to be a major shift.
Major.
In the next decade. And, you know, I've learned a lot from you over my career. I mean, I've read stuff you've written. I've filed stuff. I mean, you've had a big impact on men and women alike in our profession and as a true leader in what we do. And, you know, I think this effort of what you're doing, when we see that shift take place, you and those that you work with doing this, like, your fingerprints will be all over our profession in this country in this next chapter, which I think is going to be a bright chapter. And I think you're fostering a generation of leaders that are going to take the helm and do great work. So thanks for all that you do, Lisa.
You're welcome, man. Thank you for that wonderful compliment. Well, I had a lot of mentors and teachers in my past as well. I couldn't have gotten here without them.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Jimmy. I was going to turn and thank Gary.
Yeah,
you know,
whatever. Me came back and Jimmy at a good time. You know, hey, why don't we do this, Lisa? It's been a great conversation today, and thank you for your contributions to funeral service and to leading women in funeral service. And we have reached the end of our time together.
Aww.
And so thank you for joining us here on the Graveyard Shift. We really appreciate
it. You're most welcome.
And I'm sure any of us will be willing to join you on your podcast at some point in the future.
We'd love to have you.
We'll put you on the spot.
Wake Up Call.
And the book,
Wake Up Call.
Wake Up Call's great book. Yep. Available on Amazon.
Amazon bestseller.
Places.
You can find it on Amazon.
Thanks for bringing this thing. We'll go ahead and sign it.
Barnes & Noble has it too. Yep. And the ebook we have coming out in January, I believe. Nice. So, yeah, cool. Audibles. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Well, awesome. Well, all our listeners, thank you so much for listening to The Graveyard Shift. And if you have some comments for us here, and if you have something you'd like to say to Lisa, you can reach out to thegraveyardshift@pisari.com. We'll forward any messages meant to Lisa for her. Lisa, how can they get a hold of you?
Oh, absolutely.
Got her cell phone number right here.
You
it's,
do.
On your, it's on the bottom of your screen.
Jimmy's going to publish it internationally. You can reach me at lisa@funeralwomenlead.org.
All right.
Or if you'd like to reach out to me personally, and know more about the book and the coaching that I do, it's lisa@lisabowie.com.
Awesome. Thank you. Well, as always, to our listeners, just to wrap up here, really two things to remember here. First of all, put something that you learned today to use. And we've really got to put these things into practice. And second, just don't keep us a secret. So we encourage you to listen not only to The Graveyard Shift, but to Four Women in a Funeral. So with that, I want to say thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you all later.
Adios.
Ciao.